We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Anthony Herron.
Drew's going to be legit. The guy can play football.
Former NFL defensive lineman Anthony Herron.
That's away from the initial contact, but not the second time.
Breaking down the Bears on Fox TV.
Mr. Herron, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
College football for the Pac-12 Network.
Herron, the best of the bunch right now.
Anthony Herron with Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena this Sunday when they host Ohio State. Tip-off is set for 5:30 p.m. Buy tickets now at nusports.com. Anthony Herron at Big Ant Herron is with us in studio to talk a little bit of football. What's up, man? How are you?
Hey, I'm good. I was I'm slightly disappointed, but very intrigued by the conversation we had in the hallway because it lets me know there's more out there for me to experience.
Well, we're talking about eating exotic reptiles and things like that.
Yeah, sure.
Very much looking forward to that. I haven't had rattlesnake.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not particularly interesting. I mean, it sounds like it would be.
Very much so, yeah.
But it was, I've had it fried, I've had it in soup, and
you go somewhere to order it? Like, where do you get the best rattlesnake in the world? Who cooks it up? What cuisine?
I know you don't get it by accident.
In Texas, they fry it.
Okay.
You can usually
they shoot it, then they fry it.
Yeah, because they can just
run
pick
it over, then fry
right.
it.
Right. Well, no, it's Texas. Yeah. You shoot it first, whatever it is.
Whatever it is, you shoot it, then you cook it. That's where they shoot lettuce for the salad.
That's right.
One of the great Terry Bors lines of all time. What do you want a salad? You got to shoot lettuce. And then I've had it here in Chinatown in a soup. Just like little bits of the meat in it said rattlesnake soup. Right. And I'm like, okay, I'm in for that. But you, sir, on Twitter, I saw you were consuming a burger, the physics of which I didn't quite understand.
Is that right? I haven't seen this.
Yeah.
I do this Ant Bites thing sometimes when I travel out west for the Pac-12 games. And every once in a while, someone will introduce me to an eating challenge when I go to a certain spot. That picture... it was
Dude.
Called
the eating terrible idea.
Yeah, right. Yes. It's called the OMFG challenge. It's in Tucson, Arizona, where the Wildcats play their football. And it was, six different 1/3 pound burger patties. And then, all the cheese and the, veggies and all
How
the
did you eat it?
Oh, I'm sorry, half pound. Six different half pound.
Yeah, these are,
burgers.
These are
3 pound total.
Serious.
Six different half pound burger patties. And they did allow me to unstack it. So the clock doesn't start until you actually start consuming it. So they bring it out with the skewers sticking into the top of it just for kind of the visual intimidation. They sit it down, but they do, which it's the only eating challenge I've ever done that allowed this. Usually it's whenever you touch the food, the clock begins. This one, clock doesn't start until after you can unstack it, do whatever you want. And then once you start consuming the first patty, that's when the clock started. I had 20 minutes for that and some fries.
And you have to consume all of the bun and all of
bun, veggies, everything. The overall,
whoa,
the
veggies.
Amount. Yeah, exactly.
Wait
lettuce,
a second.
Tomatoes, onions.
There are six right. patties and what looks to be 9 pounds of cheese and one leaf of butter
lettuce
on the top.
Yeah, it was like three slices of cheese per patty.
Yeah.
And I mean, the amount of food didn't intimidate me. It was the clock. I'm a notoriously slow eater. I overchew my food. It's why I stay regular.
That's a good habit. Eating slower means you do eat less because you give your body and brain more time to send the signals that you're full.
Yeah, but it was an experience. It's one of the more. It's not the most difficult.
Did you win?
Oh yeah, undefeated in eating challenges. I haven't actually done one in the city here, which I'm disappointed. I need to find one in the city.
I'll fry you up a couple of Jack's frozen pizzas and see how you take those down.
I was taken down by
terms on the clock.
I did the Steak and Shake 7x7 and was. Didn't I was defeated.
No,
yeah. I was
7x7. That's a big burger.
Seven slices of cheese, 7 patties.
Yeah, it's a lot.
After my rookie year in Detroit, I still had because I didn't redshirt, so I still had some class to finish. I went back to Iowa City throughout the bulk of my offseason from the Lions, and a lot of the guys I came in with were still there. They were just finishing up their senior season of eligibility, so they're training, getting ready for the combine. And so I just went and hung out. And actually, my wife was still there because she'd been working at one of the TV or one of the radio stations in town at the time. So I went back to Iowa City, took some classes, hung out with my buddies. I had a little money in my pocket. So I actually started, I just acted as the bank, and I started like a ring of like betting odds for how I could get each guy to try different eating challenges. That one guy tried to finish a whole gallon of chocolate milk in a certain period of time. Another guy tried to
That can kill you.
It didn't kill him, but he didn't finish it.
Okay.
The milk went back in the opposite direction before he was able to get it down. One guy did a 2 liter of Mountain Dew, or at least tried to, and he tried and failed. So basically it was a negotiation beforehand. These are the things you really love to consume. 8 Big Macs in 15 minutes. Can you get it done? Usually I came out on the front end of that one.
Something I never thought I would see. There was a former Duke football player who became a coach later, a guy named Ted Roof.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that name?
Yeah, yeah. He was a defensive coordinator at Minnesota for a while.
Okay, well, Ted Roof, when I and my buddies, when we took over and started working at the student television station there, Cable 13, it was in a basement in the social sciences building. There were these boxes of old videotapes. And someone's like, oh, this is the Ted Roof tape. Like, what do you mean? And like, literally, like dusts it off, ka-junk, puts it in the machine. And apparently Ted Roof had bragged that he could eat a Big Mac in a single bite.
Oh.
And he did it.
Really?
He's got an enormous mouth, obviously.
I guess now that you mention it,
and
he does.
And he squished it down, and he did it. Huh. And it took a while. It was like an egg snake.
That wasn't Fred Flintstone like style, like also one swallow, or did he at least chew it once it was in there?
No, he like found a way to swallow it. In stages. Wow. It was incredible.
I bet it was.
Huh. Incredible. I mean, he kind of smushed it down and got the whole thing in his mouth, and then you sort of watched this thing. You couldn't believe what you were saying.
This has to become a social media thing now. Wherever that tape exists, it's got to be a thing.
I guarantee you it's gone. When we move studios, I'm sure it got thrown out, but that was a thing. Huh. All right, when you first heard who was in the Super Bowl, my rule, the moment you know the combatants, you go with your gut. Who did you think when you found out who they were? Who did you think was going to win?
Chiefs. There are reasons to think that it could be San Francisco with that defensive front as much as anything, and the effect they can have on the game. We think back to the not too distant past of what a New York Giants defensive line did to Tom Brady and some historic Patriots teams. But this Chiefs squad, they feel, if not impervious, they certainly feel capable of withstanding the onslaught that the 49ers are going to bring at them. And very different from opponents that San Francisco's faced here, especially in the playoff run, like, you know, whomever it is. But Kansas City, regardless of what San Francisco does in putting points on the board, there's not a point where you think the Chiefs are out of it. There's not a point where you think they can't potentially get hot and ring off several touchdowns in a row.
Outside of being super quarterback specific, what matchup intrigues you most? You know, is there a one-on-one or somebody that's going to see another player often, frequently, that intrigues you most that might blow this game apart?
Well, I think the willingness for San Francisco to run the ball will be there regardless of what happens on the scoreboard. And I think they've done a nice job. We'll see if Tevin Coleman even has a shot at being healthy and productive.
It sounds like it was pretty gross.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be far-fetched. And so, you know, you don't want Raheem Mostert to be the only guy they have to work with because he's coming off the game of his life, but it's not something that even Purdue fans are accustomed to seeing him do on the field. So the 49ers won't be able to count on that type of productivity from him alone, but they've done a nice job of rotating a variety of backs in throughout the season and getting some level of production from all of them. But the run game for San Francisco against a Kansas City defense has been good, but not great throughout the season, and not to the extent that the Titans were going to need to control the clock and execute in the red zone and some of those things. But it'll have to have, a similar vibe to it if there's going to be a shot at withstanding whatever sort of early onslaught Kansas City might throw at them, but then also in trying to maintain that, trying to sustain that throughout the game. Even if it's thwarted early, San Francisco will have to maintain, very similar to what Kyle Shanahan didn't do the last time he coached in the Super Bowl, maintain a willingness to run the ball and not play the game at the Chiefs' tempo.
I asked this of Hub Arkish, and he kind of dismissed it because he said the 49ers, the way they play their front seven, he said they probably don't care. But I'm intrigued by the balance of trying to attack and take the fight to Patrick Mahomes with your obviously formidable front four and also containing him, not over rushing to allow, because once he escapes, if you're going to give him those little areas of slack water, he's going to eat that up in 7 and 8 yard bursts and go, you know, scampering out of bounds if he has to, because he's going to avail himself of that. So how do you make sure that you're also trying to get him on the ground and hit him and make him unhappy and uncomfortable while not also inviting him to get out and around you?
It certainly matters, you know, because of the way he can extend the play. And it'll be a part of the game plan. What the 49ers have as not necessarily an advantage, but it's part of their DNA already, because they're largely power rushers. They're power rushers who counter very well off of their power, where whether it's DeForest Buckner or Nick Bosa or Eric Armstead.
Well, Bosa's a different. Bosa is better than any of them.
Right. Well,
he's the second best player on the field in my estimation.
DeForest Buckner is really good too. He didn't have the numbers this season that he'd been putting up the last couple of years into it, but he freed up Eric Armstead to kind of emerge and have the best season of his career. And Nick Bosa is damn good, but DeForest Buckner is a monster in there as well, and especially for an angular guy, like he's built like Roy Robertson Harris, where he doesn't necessarily look like he should be a powerful interior defensive lineman because he's so tall. He's not tall and super thick, but he's thick enough, and he brings so much force on the inside, but he also has the ability to work off of that when he starts with power. And he's got these long limbs where he can very violently get rid of the blocker with the ability to either snatch a guy out of his shoes, or once the blocker's unweighted and working backwards, then he gets his levers going with like a chop club move towards the outside that sets him up to the edge of blockers, but it usually begins with power. So all of them and their willingness to condense the pocket with power first should force Pat Mahomes to have more difficulty with the escape lanes that he's so effective at finding.
How good is Kansas City's defense?
It's good. It's not great. It's competitive, but it's not anything that I think.
I didn't think the word good was going to come out of your mouth the way you started that. That's a very dismissive, it's good.
It's competitive. San Francisco's offense is largely non-threatening, and so I think Kansas City's defense will be able to be very competitive against them, because you know from a game plan standpoint that you're going to have to deal with movement of the launch point that they do with their quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. You're going to have to deal with the run game, which has, even over the last couple of seasons, has not necessarily been the strong suit of the Chiefs. And so with that in mind, at least you know what you're dealing with. The two main things they want to do is if Jimmy G's passing, they want him on the move when it happens, and they do more often than not would prefer to run the ball just to set up play action and pocket movement. So you know what you're getting into. Physically, are they going to really be able to stand up to it? San Francisco's so physical up front. I don't necessarily think so.
Do the Niners have something offensively that they're ready to unleash? Something that they can just like throw it at the wall, like the hell with it. We're against the Chiefs now. It's the Super Bowl. We need to score. Not necessarily the point where Kyle Shanahan is going to do like he did with the Falcons and try and play the wrong pace. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking back to when Emmanuel Sanders got added to that team. I want to say in that first game he played, he's got like 2 catches over 18 yards and Garoppolo just hummed it in there. And it was a sense of that offense that you hadn't seen before. And it's the next game, I think, against the Cardinals where Garoppolo's going downfield and picking apart a bad defensive secondary. Is there something in that offense that they can ask to go get somewhat dynamic?
What I believe they will definitively do is force feed George Kittle in the way that they haven't in the postseason because of who the opponent is. I think they were confident they could get away with trying to dominate Minnesota mainly with the ground attack, almost exclusively with the ground attack against the Green Bay Packers, against those two offenses with competent quarterback from Kirk Cousins and the explosive talent they have outside with an all-time great quarterback in Aaron Rodgers and what he brings to the table and the way Green Bay was willing to run the ball at you. They weren't afraid of either of those offenses just overrunning their defense. I don't believe they'll step onto the field. Robert Saleh is not built as a guy who's going to go onto the field and say, well, we can't stop this squad. But he, Kyle Shanahan, are both going to be very conscious of what the Chiefs have the potential to do. So to say that we'll be very conservative with how we attack them with our main playmaker, George Kittle, I don't think that'll be the same approach. I think you'll see screen passes to George Kittle. You may even see a jet sweep to George Kittle because he's fast enough to turn the corner on it. That within their playbook. Formationally, you can bring that if you go to a multi-tight end set, bring him on a jet sweep, and whether it's a pitch play or a toss play, do not be shocked if you see George Kittle in some kind of a jet sweep action, basically just running, and they can work it as a swing pass as well. It doesn't have to be a handoff,
But or the Matt Nagy flip, the Andy Reid, the little dive flip.
Exactly. Not a straight shovel pass up the middle, but something where he's working towards the exterior, something where you get the defense bound up towards the inside with the formation and then allow Kittle the opportunity to turn the corner. You'll see them get George Kittle, or at least attempt to, the football in a variety of ways because he's so effective in so many different manners that they try to do it. And you know he's a willing and as a tight end, a dominant run blocker. So formationally, they can expect that this is going to be a run play, and then you slip him out or sneak him out, get him matched up against a linebacker or a safety who, for the most part, the last couple of seasons, he's just dominated all those matchups.
This segment's brought to you by Campland RV, RV buying made easy. Ring in the new year with Campland RV. Enjoy special RV show pricing all month long. Stop by the dealership or visit CamplandRV.com for more details. Campland RV, RV buying made easy. Just a short drive off I-94 in Northwest Indiana. Via email, a question here from Mac. This is Anthony. Have you ever had three Panchero burritos in Iowa City? He said, when I was there, Robert Gallery did that famously. So my friend said we would routinely have two. One time she said she had three. Have you ever done that?
Personally, I have not. One thing that was, and Panchero's is basically, it's like the Chipotle of Iowa City.
That's the spot, right?
You know, which is one of those sort of Tex-Mexy kind of burrito places. And it, you know, Panchero's is almost specific to the state of
Iowa.
What was the one in Illinois?
What was the one in Champaign? Burritos as big as your head?
There's Moe's.
La Bamba?
La Bamba.
Yeah, okay. Madison had a La Bamba. I don't know if it's the same one, but they had a La Bamba. Okay. Yeah.
So for Panchero's, that's the Iowa City equivalent of that. I personally have never even attempted to consume three Panchero's burritos, but I referenced the gut buster. I called it the gut busters challenge that I did after my rookie season, where I was convincing a lot of my teammates to attempt to eat large quantities of food or consume large quantities of liquid in X number of time and put betting odds on it. And I'd play as the casino essentially for these endeavors. Everyone, their eligibility was up who was participating in this at the time. Just put that disclaimer on it.
Of course, everything's fine.
An offensive lineman
around like Odell Beckham,
a guy named Ben Sobieski, an offensive lineman at Iowa, who he came in with me. He was the other guy who played as a true freshman. We came in and Hayden Fry's one of his last recruiting classes in 97. Brett Bielema, you know, was the Patriots D-line coach, now with the Giants. Bielema was, yes, you know him well from your time in Madison. So he actually brought us both in. Ben played as a true freshman, then had surgery after surgery after surgery. Ended up being a Hawkeye for like 7 years or something like that, even though he played as a true freshman. Ended up getting drafted by the Buffalo Bills. Rarely playing football throughout his time in college. Wow. Just this behemoth from Matamidon, Minnesota, and one of the most phenomenal athletes you've ever seen. Went to the combine, lit it up, and the Bills drafted him in the fifth round, basically just based off his physical potential as an offensive tackle. Then he maintained his injury-prone nature in the NFL. But I gave Sobieski odds on trying to finish three of these mammoth Panchero's burritos, and I want to say it was about 20 minutes. He was on track to do it, but
then
he got hurt. Pulled the hand.
What a surprise! Ended up dislocating his shoulder. He had the big drum underneath by the end of it. But he got cocky towards the end in the final moments. And the ruling went to the committee because he still had a bunch of rice and beans in his mouth. He had placed them inside his gourd, but he hadn't actually swallowed it down yet. So he lost, and he was not able to get it done.
You know, get points for chipmunking. When we come back, Dan and I were talking a little bit about the Pro Bowl.
Okay.
Because they've changed a rule.
I love it.
In a way that we both really like and would love to see in the NFL. I don't think it'll get us to watch the Pro Bowl, but talk about it.
Hey,
yes.
A lot of folks watch it, man. Y'all hate on the Pro Bowl if you want to.
I didn't say
folks are tuned in.
If it flips your switch, that's awesome. It doesn't have to flip the switch for everybody. We'll talk with Anthony Heron about a really fun and potential rule change in the NFL. We come back. Bernstein McKnight on the score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. You want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves that comes with a $5,000 signing bonus? Go to chicagowolves.com/sprint to learn how to win the Sprint Power Play Payday. Anthony Herron is in studio on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, as he is every Thursday during football season. So
that's not Tedeschi Trucks Band, is it?
No, it's Wolfpack.
That's Wolfpack.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with them.
Wolfpack is a New York-based group of University of Michigan music school guys who put together sort of a funk instrumental group to rival like the Muscle Shoals session groups. They're
you know, you describe them that way, they sound insufferable, but the music is actually pretty good.
Dan's been great at that today, hasn't he?
No, they're amazing. They're amazing. We play them. And we play an offshoot of Wolfpack called the
Fearless Flyers.
Fearless Flyers.
Oh, they're okay. Terrific. Yeah,
if you want to go down a YouTube rabbit hole and you want to see remarkably tight musicianship, YouTube Fearless Flyers, YouTube Wolfpack, and just check it out. You spend a whole afternoon just going, God, these guys are good.
Have they done a Tiny Desk concert?
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe. That's pretty much how I've been introduced to any new music over the past 2 years.
It's a good way to do it.
That series is so good.
All right, so the Pro Bowl is not going to have kickoffs. You're either going to take the ball to 25, or you're going to do at the end of the game, in the fourth quarter, you get one chance to do this. You say, well, what if you want an onside kick? Well, there are no kickoffs. So instead of an onside kick, if you score and you want to retain possession, you can opt for a 4th and 15 from your 35-yard line.
25, I thought.
35.
Oh, is that right?
35-yard line.
Oh, they get the ball at the 25 if you allow them to. Okay.
Yeah, if it's a non-kickoff, the other team gets it to the 25. If you want to retain possession, you get a 4th and 15 from your own 35. Hmm. And that's it. And I think that's awesome.
Hmm.
We're trying to think of unintended consequences, et cetera. You like that?
I mean, yeah, the kickoff is going to be eliminated at some point anyway.
Yeah.
The Cordero Pattersons and Devin Hesters of the world will have far less of an opportunity to be productive NFL players at that point. But, you know, positional prowess matters, and so I guess you just get more guys on the roster who are great just at playing particular positions that don't involve special teams. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't lose sleep over it, I guess, but I will miss the kickoff whenever it leaves the game. It's been a very violent and visceral part of football for a long time. Mm-hmm. So it's something I'll be sorry when it's gone.
Well, I would guess, though, that I like this idea because if the kickoff is going away, and it seems like we have lost control of that, right? That's on its way out. Then you do need some sort of option to get the ball back after you've scored.
Mm-hmm.
This seems as good as any, though it does have, you know, some unintended consequences. But I'll tell you this, in the best reading I've done, the onside kick percentages are about 6 to 8%, depending on where you look.
But they're down this year because of the rules changes.
Incredibly down.
It doesn't happen anymore. Right.
So, but if you take into account the surprise onside kicks, you know, onside kicks where everybody knows they're coming, mm-hmm. they're like 2%.
Right.
But if you add in the surprise onside kicks, like, you know, Peyton in the Super Bowl or something, like that, Sean Payton in the mm-hmm. Super Bowl, not that Peyton Manning was ever doing it, although I'd watch it. But the 4th and 15 conversion rate is something like 12.5% to 13%. Which increases the number. It doesn't seem completely out of whack for the game itself,
right?
And something that is feasible.
Yeah, yeah, I agree, and I think that in whatever manner the kickoff ends up, you know, going the way of the dodo bird, then yeah, you do want some supplement to still have an entertaining moment of chance where the team can sort of swipe the ball back and get a change of possession in a moment where you thought you knew who was going to have the ball in the next snap or the next series.
Here's what I love about it. Couple things. First of all of these offensive geniuses can now have something in their back pocket where it could be some kind of really cool trick play that they practice it and they've got it. It's not some hurried thing like, well, 4th and 15, I'll run an 888 straight up the middle, yeah. hope we get a pass interference. Right. They'll have it. They'll have something practiced.
Just like
at the NFL
level. 2-point conversion plays, and
right.
it's now part of the
right.
game.
Right. So it gives you that. Also, and more importantly, instead of the randomness of the minimal control that you have, I know certain kickers are better than others at getting the ball to flop over and pop up and all the different things they can do, but especially if it's on grass, there's only so much, that rather than having second and third stringers on the field in a jumble of arms and legs, punching each other in the face and grabbing their balls and spitting on each other to try to get the ball out from under there.
Yeah,
and
then, I want to see some of that.
And then having it all unraveled on a 5-minute, you know, video interpretation.
Where you really still can't tell.
And you really still can't tell.
Bodies what did or didn't happen.
Instead of that chaos and randomness, you've got the stars in the game, actual football players doing actual football things. Your best wide receiver, maybe it's not a trick play. Maybe if you have the guy, you get a matchup. You throw it back shoulder that you just say, out jump him, do what you do, Allen Robinson or whatever it might be. So I just like the fact that you got better, more important, more significant players involved in a big game instead of jamokes out there in a pile.
I mean, it all makes sense the way you describe it like that. I do think, you know, the other guys, there's something to be said for what we've seen over the years, whether it's, you know, the moving back of extra points and the effect that that's had on the game and really on kickers in general. Because I think not having on an extra point when it was, you know, whatever, it used to be 20 yards or whatever, not having the ability just to stroke that easy one and feel the rhythm of that, and now field goals, I feel like, are affected by guys missing extra points and that getting in their head. And so you do still have that special teams element of the game that's involved in how it affects the larger scope of things. And the same can be said for surprise onsides and whether or not you get a big kick return and the momentum adjustment that comes from that. You convert a 4th and 15. I mean, it matters, but it in my thought would probably still feel very similar if the coach decided to go for a 4th down anyway. So there is, you do miss that separate element of what special teams can end up bringing to it.
Yeah, I think a good point here for the 6-3-0. It's just another chance for bad pass interference calls to affect the game.
Yeah, that's absolutely a valid criticism. I would also, one of the things I've heard too that kind of shoots down the 4th and 15 in a regular season type setting is the idea that, okay, the offense has just gone down and scored. They've probably gone for a 2-point conversion. And if they haven't, you know, you kick the long extra point like you mentioned. But now the defense is going to have to drag their ass down to the other side of the field, the starters, the ones who were just out there and gave up what was presumably a long touchdown drive, and then defend a 4th and 15. How you played, how much of a disadvantage do you think that might put the defense at, knowing that, you know, the same ones that just ran that long scoring drive and, you know, theoretically a 2-point conversion on the offense side is going to have to go down and do the same thing?
Well, think of it through the lens of sudden change, where when a takeaway happens on the field and the opposing offense, if it's early in the next series, the opposing offense goes out there and immediately goes for a strike play more often than not. It's, you know, momentum is a part of that. But also, if that opposing defense has just recently come off the field and then you force them back out there again in quick fashion, or if someone has to cover multiple kickoffs in a row, why that second return is so big, the amount of energy that you expend playing a defensive series or running 100 yards down the field to cover a kick and then trying to get off a block and chasing guys across the field to see if you can get involved in a tackle or mosh pit or anything else, all those things do affect the energy and sap the energy that you're going to take the field with on the next snap. So, yes, it does. As odd as it sounds to say fourth and 15 advantage offense, it certainly tips the scales in the favor of the offense because of what just happened.
Here's the other thing. We were talking about this in the show meeting beforehand. Why would a defense not, in a fourth and 15 scenario like this, why would they not run a Vic Fangio-style picket fence at the sticks?
Like a 3-8?
Like, is there a reason you would see a different strategy employed?
Well, you still need to react to route combinations.
Sure.
And so, you know, even when you think of, like, Big Ben scenarios where someone's going to throw a Hail Mary at the end of the game, yeah, you'll put a guy or two back towards the end zone, but still to be able to react to the route as it develops can be something that throws off the vision, the timing of the quarterback, can put your defenders in a position where you not only have guys just waiting to catch routes at the end zone in a Big Ben scenario or at the sticks in a first down, so Big Ben being the term for a Hail Mary defense, or just in a first down scenario where they're waiting to catch routes at or near the sticks because you're stationary. And stationary defensive backs, like, you know, you see it play out in the red zone where I used to coach guys like, don't pedal in the paint. When you have a receiver approaching you, try to stay in motion. Not a full-on foot chatter, but catch the route beyond the goal line as opposed to pedaling back into it and then being in a more defensive posture. When you know where the offense is trying to get to, you want to see if you can make your defensive backs offensive to a certain extent. So have a safety there. Have a couple of safeties there, but you wouldn't necessarily want to line the entire defense up waiting for it because then they are in a full defensive posture.
You're asking to get run over.
Either run over or just not being in a position where you can have any body momentum to react to a route. Like say they run the route at 10 to 12 yards, and then once they catch it, now you're somewhat stationary in trying to react and pursue. It's like when folks always wonder when a guy catches the ball short of the first down marker, if he gets tackled short, it's, oh, how come you didn't run the route beyond the sticks? Well, quite frequently, you see a guy catch the ball short of the first down marker and run beyond it because it was a proper route combination and the guy has space between himself and the defense, and then he's able to run after catch to pick up the first down. So not every route in theory should be run beyond the sticks just to pick up a first down. We see it happen all the time. We only react to it when it doesn't work.
I react to it when the guy on the Bears catches the ball and then runs 2 yards the wrong way instead of just sticking his foot down and going with knowing the line is right there. All you have to do is fall over, but instead you try to keep running backward around the defender. It happens at least once a game. I hate it.
It's a lack of awareness. It is. I mean, it's one of the ways Tariq Cohen needs to continue growing, which I do think as the season went on, he started to grow as a runner, as a fielder of punts. There's so much lost yardage that Tariq Cohen had as a punt returner where he didn't field the ball adequately. We saw some progression in that throughout the season, but all that points to awareness.
Yeah, that was like outfielders. That's route efficiency for outfielders.
Right.
That's really the same job. That's why not every kickoff returner can be a punt returner, because you do have to have some of that outfield sense about what you're doing.
All right.
And members of the outfield. Anthony, thank you, sir.
Thanks,
fellas. Yeah, always.
That is Anthony Herron. When we come back, we're going to give away a pair of tickets to see Matchbox 20 at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. And also, before we get to a baseball season, you always look at what are some statistical milestones that could be reached.
Hey, the weird, cool stuff.
I have a handful of unimportant, really strange milestones for 2020 to keep an eye on. I've been saving this.
Awesome.
Now's a good time to do it.
Looking forward to that. That's next. Bernstein McKnight on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
How about a number there, McDoink?
Give me, 6.
1, 1-800-919-2354-56.
Every time. Caller 6 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, wins a pair of tickets to see Matchbox 20 at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater on August 21st. Now, I thought you'd find this cool. MLB.com has a list here of some strange historical notes, thresholds possible in the year 2020.
Okay.
In 2019, Shin-Soo Choo became the 23rd player in history to be hit by 150 pitches. Meanwhile, Anthony Rizzo led MLB with 27 hit by pitch, okay, putting himself within five plunkings of the big 150. So he's going to join the 150 club. More importantly, both are going to move into the top 20 all time. Former Cardinal and Brewers second baseman Fernando Vina, yeah, is 19th all time with 157. That means both Chu and Rizzo are in line to pass him.
You got
to
watch. There's going to be Astros skyrocketing up that list this
right.
year.
Jose Altuve,
is going to get plunked 7 or 8 times in a game, I feel like. And if Mike Clevenger's pitching against them, watch out, Alex Bregman. You got a heater coming for your noggin.
Albert Pujols is already the all-time leader in double plays grounded into with 395. So the only player past 350. Cal Ripken Jr. is second with exactly 350. With just 5, Pujols will become the first player to join the 400 ground into double play club.
That is happening.
Okay. Miguel Cabrera. He has had 77. He's 77 double plays clear of the second most double play prone active player. He sits in 7th all time with 318. He won't catch Ripken. He'd have to set a career high, but he should be able to pass Hank Aaron for 4th.
Okay. All right.
Okay. When you think of managerial ejections, Bobby Cox, Lou Piniella, mm-hmm, Earl Weaver. But now, Ron Gardenhire. He's only led the majors in ejections twice in 15 years, but he's been a consistent presence in the top 5. He currently sits 7th all time.
It's like the Hank Aaron of managerial ejections.
83 ejections. With just 4 more, he'll pass Tony La Russa and Frankie Frisch to become the 5th most ejected manager in history.
Awesome.
Okay. Now, we have a race to become the first manager to reach 300 career replay challenges.
Oh, no. That is not. I do. Oh, no. No, I do not want this.
One is Rays manager Kevin Cash. But your leader right now is Angels manager Joe Madden. So it's going to be interesting to see if Madden can hold off Cash to become the inaugural member of the 300 managerial challenge club.
Both Tampa Bay guys by upbringing.
Yep, that's
interesting.
Right. Albert Pujols is also going to move into the top 5 and sacrifice flies. And
top 5 ever?
Yeah, and D. Gordon is chasing 100 caught stealings. There you have it.
These are good numbers.
I didn't say they were important.
No,
those
are good numbers.
Mildly interesting, right? Thanks to Matt Miller. Thanks to Anthony Herron. Thanks to Jay Zawoski. Thanks to Rick Kemp. Thanks to the executioner, Ray Diaz, for doing what he does. That was fun stuff today.
I particularly
liked the 10:20 to 10:40 that started with Les Grobstein and ended up with you airing grievances.
A string of nonsense. And I'm sure it'll probably come back on the Mac and Parkin show.
Lawrence, you can count on it.
That's what comes around, goes around. Lawrence, coming up next with Transition on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.